Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium, and everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 317. Ken, Jack, Jeff Lowe, Trobollins. It is. It's almost Christmas time. Happy Hanukkah, happy holidays. I don't know, maybe start off on a light note here. We're not doing a Christmas movie today, though. We are doing a Steven Soderbergh movie on HBO Max called Let Them All Talk. And I think we have varying opinions on this movie.
It's exhausting. It's going to be...
It's not... It's the ultimate not for us movie. I couldn't, aside from Baby Einstein, I couldn't think of anything that's less not for us or less for us, more Baby not Einstein. For us, however that works.
There is, so we'll see. I don't think I dislike as much as maybe you guys did. However, there are two, I thought, laugh out loud funny moments in this movie. And I don't think they were intentional. they both made me laugh out loud, and we'll see if we can guess on that. We also have a bracket which Trill will reveal at some point in time during that at his pleasing. A bracket we will work through at the end of the episode. Other than that, no interviews or anything, just some news. But off the top, non-movie stuff, what's going on, what's happening? I imagine whatever you're about to say might have to do with Cyberpunk.
Nah, there's really not much more to talk about with Cyberpunk for me. It is what it is. What are you getting for Christmas? Like, what do you want for Christmas? What's like, or like, I guess like we're old enough to where we just like buy ourselves things for Christmas. It's just how it works.
Yeah, maybe, but you're in a different position, maybe a little bit, because like you're Santa now.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. We're easing.
Actually, wait a second. This has to be your first real Santa year. She definitely is aware enough now.
Yeah, I mean she knows who Santa Claus is, and you know she'll open up some presents and you know connect the dots. But we're not going all out. I think next year will be the first like semi all out year.
I forget
I think it's when the kid has to start asking for stuff, like when the concept of like. Writing a letter to Santa and having Santa fulfill the wish. I think that's when the concept really latches on.
Of like ownership. Yeah.
Or just like the magic of it. Whereas right now there's like Santa Claus and there's opening gifts. Both are delightful, but I don't think she's connected the two yet.
Gotcha. I sent you guys Christmas presents, but I forget what I got the baby.
You got her little plush horse.
That was it. Yeah. I forget if it was that a horse girl thing.
No, it was a plush horse. Enjoyed it. She enjoyed it. I mean, I enjoyed it more. I'm a brony. It's my collection.
Talking about what I got you. Do you want to tell the world?
It was, one day you just, in that package, you sent me a PlayStation shirt. It's just a shirt that said PlayStation on it.
Just seemed like something you'd like, but the other thing too.
Oh God. It was a house divided license plate, Indiana and Purdue. I'm going to put that in the old Volkswagen.
Just toss on the back of the station wagon.
I just want like, how, like brain divided.
Just zooming around Hoboken. Just everyone's like, what the fuck is this guy?
Oh boy. Yeah, about man, actually I've always wanted one. it's up here. I feel like it's in my room somewhere. I don't know. It's somewhere around here.
Put it to use, man.
I'm going to. I just haven't gotten around to you know putting it on.
Oh yeah, sure.
You know, I do like generic shirts with logos of things.
It was like the Japanese PlayStation logo. It just seemed like something Trill would like.
Oh, it's a cool shirt. It's a cool shirt. But it also was kind of a shot across the bow. Because you had the PlayStation 5. And,
oh,
and,
I didn't even think about that. Yeah, damn.
No.
I was thinking about getting you... I found like a big Nerve, like from Evangelion, like jacket. It was like a duster. And I was considering buying that for you instead. And I was like, you just won't wear it. Because it's so fucking... It's too much.
I want to get
it's
a pair.
Cosplay.
I want to get a pair of like fog not anime glasses. You just look like Gendo all the time. Maybe they have like LED lights in them, so they light up. And it looks like the reflection's always hitting.
Yes, exactly. Like and just a big pair of white gloves.
Perv all the time. so yeah, Kenja got me that, and I don't know where your current address is. So I need to. The last thing I got you was the Warhammer, which. You know, I don't know.
I got good use out of that.
Yeah, you know, and then I'm sure someone LARPed it off of you. They looted you. Got the hammer.
It's in their inventory now. It only has 291 DPS though. Need to upgrade that sucker.
The
hammer of Grundle's lament.
the episode tonight, folks, brought to you in part by Roman. That's right, many guys, most guys. Yeah, we'll say most guys.
All guys, no, all guys.
Yeah, they've tried different ways to last longer. But all thinking of them. About not having the PS5 doesn't always work. Folks at Roman, an online men's health company, are changing the game with Roman swipes. That's right. Clinically proven way to last longer. Effective, easy to use, fast acting. Don't require a prescription at all. They can ship them in discreet, unmarked packaging. They look like little boxes of candy, but they're not. Definitely don't eat them. They're super easy to use. Just take the swipes out of the packet, swipe it on, let it dry. You're good to go. Go to getroman.com/lights, LIJHTS. You get your first month of swipes.
I have a little
$5 off.
Air duster I use to help it dry. I can't wait. I just put it on.
That doesn't come. It doesn't come with the swipes.
No, but it just gets the process going faster.
Yeah. GetRoman.com/lights. Some news, random news today. A lot of random news. Wonder Woman 1984 reviews are in. It's certified fresh, 89% of Rotten Tomatoes after 85 reviews. The critics' consensus. Great. It says Wonder Woman 1984 is an epic dose of heart and vibrant escapism that proves there are still unexpected thrills to be found in superhero cinema. Interesting reviews, though.
Yeah.
It's a good one. Because a lot of them have that kind of
ambitious vibe.
That good but vibe, that ambitious vibe, or this is what we need right now type of vibe.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I don't know what that means.
There's a lot of them that are, they kind of have the same vibe where it's like they're saying overall that it's good, but at the same time saying, yeah, the characters are bad, the plot is bad, the special effects look bad, but it's good. It's good. It's escapism. It's something we needed. It's like that's, but you're saying it's bad. Like everything, the way you describe the movie is bad, but your summation is that it's good. And that to me makes no sense. So I'm getting a sinking feeling that this is in fact not going to be a good movie.
I think it'll be enjoyable. But ultimately, like, even in line with the other DC movies that were enjoyable, like Aquaman and even the first Wonder Woman, I don't come back to comic book movies much. I'm going to be honest with you guys. So I'm probably not the right group. Like, I know Jeff probably watches Avengers Endgame like before he goes to bed every night.
I've actually only seen Endgame all the way through. I've watched it one time all the way through since theaters.
I mean, I don't know if that's for everybody. I kind of feel... At least for me, there's less of a return factor for comic book movies just because the mental stimulation and the excitement you get, it comes so much from the first viewing because that's the kind of like product it is. It's just like, it's like a thrill ride. And then, you know, you move on to the next one. Whereas like, you know, what you consider to be movies that Martin Scorsese would like, you want to watch again and again because they challenge your brain. And I'm not knocking on comic book movies, but I would say like even more than that, like if I were to go rewatch a comic book movie, I would rewatch it like one of the, you know, Marvel fucking movies over like any of the Aquaman, like top, what I consider top tier DC movies. And it probably just slots in right there. Whereas it's going to be enjoyable, but it's not going to be something you return to. The funny thing about reviewing is there's just like, there's almost no incentive to give anything a bad review anymore. Like I thought about that a lot with Cyberpunk, because like the gamers get mad when you give people bad reviews, and the comic book fans get mad when you give people bad reviews. So it's almost just safer to just like say like, this is a 3.5 out of 5 or a 4 out of 5 and make your peace with it. And then you still have access to the next review, and they don't cut you off.
Yeah, there's I can read 4 right now that kind of sum up what we're talking about. A charming if messy blockbuster. There may be a lot of padding, but there's a lot to enjoy. Ambitious action sequences. Absolutely crackles in the big screen.
That's also my review of football.
Yeah, digs into it from 3 primary perspectives. 2 don't land, but Diana's journey winds up being the strongest, which, to that credit, like I think that as long as hers is the best, then maybe, you know, I think it should be enjoyable. Like if there were 3 perspectives and Wonder Woman's was the worst one, that would probably not be very good. And then I'll give you one more. It says, given how much Wonder Woman 1984 gets right, it's disappointing that the overriding feeling is that of being slightly underwhelmed. Those are all positive reviews too. So that's what we mean by kind of, it's a weird mix where I'm still very excited to watch this. First of all, it's a blockbuster. But second of all, like, it just, you know, I didn't love the first one. I wasn't over the moon about it. But you know, we like the 80s stuff, the color palette, like a lot of the people in it. So I'm excited to see it. But that was, you got the sense right away the type of reviews that were going to roll in it, and they were all kind of the same, good or bad. They all kind of sounded the same.
It's tough. I don't even know how you can be a critic this year. I don't know what it is. It just seems like it would throw me off. I mean, I guess we're kind of critics, but it's thrown me off like so much just in terms of my expectations. And I'm not like, you know, I don't consider us to be professionals, or I'm not knowledgeable in movies, but even this year has just been very disorienting in terms of like, I don't know what to expect when I watch movies now, because I can't, I don't know, like it's on a streaming service and you're not used to the constant, or I guess the consistent loop that we used to have in the pre-COVID world of like, go into the movie, watch it, talk about it online. Whereas now it's just like everything gets dumped out there, and the conversation this year has just stopped really quickly about things. And there hadn't been anything released. So, I mean,
we're reviewing a movie today, which is an experiment.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's more of an, which that Steven Soderbergh kind of just is making experiments now, like more than he's making just regular movies. But that's what, like, you're right. Like, I don't know what, you don't know what to expect, because it's Meryl Streep. It's like HBO Max, for example. Not that I thought this would be the greatest thing of all time, but it is an experiment, you know? So when you click play with the mixture, I think you have a good point. You click play, like now there's a mixture of movies that are truly for big screen moments and for release dates of big premieres and hype. They're mixed with these movies that just aren't. So you don't really know what you're going to get.
And the experiment is, what if a church youth group did improv?
That just reminds you of how
we're not there yet. We're not to the review yet. Hold on.
Yeah. It's that exciting, folks.
Oh, by the way, speaking of HBO Max, I watched all episodes except for the finale, which drops on Thursday, of The Flight Attendant with Kaley Cuoco.
This is good. I haven't gotten to it yet.
Did you get to the
part where she serves in-flight beverages?
The opening scene, my friend. It is definitely like it's trash TV, but it's also kind of fun. Like it's, if you have nothing else to watch, I would dive into it. It's like kind of fun. There's some parts that are funny. The style is really weird. It's not just like a cookie cutter, like mystery drama thing. It's fun. It's like a mystery comedy. It's fun. I don't know, if people, you need something to watch, it's easy to rip through. It's not that many. High production value too. A lot of traveling. That was probably an easy gig for her to accept after Big Bang Theory. Like, here, we'll pay you millions. You can travel the world for this movie. Like, okay.
Yeah. And when she headlines her own series too. And it's always big. And I'm sure she's getting paid a lot too.
Oh, yeah.
She got paid a lot for Big Bang Theory. And Apple's probably just like, people know people who love, you are they like and you. They like you a lot, and you're a very acclaimed television, maybe movie. What movie was she in? What was Kaley her big? Coco? Was her yeah? What was her big? Didn't wasn't she in like a?
She was in one with Josh Gad.
I thought she did like a movie before. I don't know.
The best.
I can't
man.
Think of a big one. No. She was.
What's
in.
It called? What's the one with Josh Gad called?
With Josh Gad.
Groomsman. He's looking for Groomsman with Kevin Hart.
The wedding something ringer.
Wedding planner.
Oh, okay.
Right, it's a movie. I'm not making that movie yet.
I think it's Wedding Ringer.
You're right. It is the Wedding Ringer. You're right.
She hasn't done that much movie work. I thought she was in like a movie or something. I'm probably just mixing up like the Eight Simple Rules where she Rest was the peace. Daughter on that. Yeah, John Ritter.
Mm-hmm.
With because I thought like as a teenager she was in some movie and then went on Eight Simple Rules. I don't really remember. Whatever.
I might
get into that.
That's the flight attendant. Yeah, I mean, again, it's a very easy light watch, and it's like kind of funny, and it's a mystery. It's one of those ones where even if you're like, this isn't good, you're likely going to have to. I have to watch the rest. I want to know what happens.
I would love to know what Tim Cook has watched on that service.
Nothing.
No,
he watches like live streams of people in the Ukraine getting beheaded or something like that. we think he's entertained by shows on Apple TV. He's the CEO of like one of the biggest companies in the world.
Was that Daniel Radcliffe movie where he had the guns stapled to his hand? Yeah, he just watches that type shit.
But it's real life. It's not the movie. Not a movie. Yeah,
I just picture him sitting down in his very like neat home, all Apple products, like remotes all lined up.
Everything's Herman Miller.
Yes, he turns it on. He sits down. It's the opening scene of like the morning show, and he goes, "Oh, never mind," and just turns it off and he leaves. It's very simple.
He sends out an email. He's like, "How much did we pay for this show again?"
It's one of the most expensive shows of all time in terms of cast. It's crazy, but Apple's paying for name. It's yeah. Anyway.
Apple's got it.
Mm-hmm. I do have the cash. Dungeons and Dragons. That's a movie that's going to be happening from Hasbro's popular role-playing game. Chris Pine will be starring in a live-action adaptation of Dungeons and Dragons.
I don't know.
How'd they not get our guy?
Joe Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello. He's like the number one Dungeons and Dragons celebrity in the entire fucking world that's not named Gary Gygax. Rest in peace.
Do you think they're going to do a Jumanji thing here? I would say with any of these game movies, it seems like the most obvious immersion point is just to go ahead and do the Jumanji thing.
I guess when you want to make money, who cares what people think, but you have to commit. I mean, you're committing to the fact that you're like, all right, we're ripping off Jumanji, I guess. Cause I think that's the way to make this work because I don't know if Dungeons and Dragons, that's just becomes,
well, it's almost like in order to, without like making, you got to make Dungeons and Dragons a thing within the movie that the characters are aware of Dungeons and Dragons as a game, or else it's just you're buying the name of the movie to put on the movie itself, which has been done before.
Of course.
Like Wing Commander, right? That they did it there and a lot of stuff. But I feel like now in the way things are written, it feels like this would be an obvious candidate for like either people getting sucked in the game or some sort of other
device. Yeah, because making an RPG into a movie is hard. Making a board game into a movie is hard. Making a turn-based anything into a movie is hard. Like none of this seems like it should work. So I'm assuming that they're just going to be using the name and kind of going into their own story or whatever you want to call it. Maybe like a sub-story from Dungeons & Dragons. I don't know. But obviously, there's a lot of huge fans out there that I'm sure would flood out to watch it.
I just feel like if Chris Pine's involved, I don't see him doing a straight-up action hero on this one. I see him doing like a more of a comedy tilt like he did in Horrible Bosses, like going back to that, where he's like obviously aware he's playing Dungeons & Dragons.
You think so?
I don't know. I just – that feels like the most Hollywood thing for them to do right now. Like if this was 1995, I would say like, yeah, for sure. It's just going to be a fantasy epic called Dungeons and Dragons with no real connection to the movie.
I could see it being along the lines of him playing the game with somebody for the first time, like he got dragged into doing it, and they get like you said, get sucked into the game, and they no longer have control over what happens to them because the players are rolling the dice or whatever. Kind of like Jumanji in that sense.
All right. I have a leak from the script here. Can you read it, Ken Jack? Okay, you're the store manager, and you asked me if I like, he said, do you like Dungeons and Dragons?
Hello, sir. Do you like Dungeons and Dragons?
Yeah, dragons, these nuts all over your face.
All right, here, we'll play another one. You're Chris Pine, okay?
Okay.
Okay, Mr. Chris Pine, are you good at fitness?
What's fitness?
Fitting these nuts in your mouth.
Mr. You're Chris Pine now. Mr. Pine, are you familiar with the Greek tragedy of Bofides?
I've never heard. Who's Bofides, sir?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
Oh, this improv just died on the spot.
No ant.
The next thing on the list here, I told you it's random today. This is the most Zack Snyder fucking thing of all time. Zack Snyder says that new Justice League will likely carry an R rating. He said, and I quote, this is from Entertainment Weekly, this movie is insane and so epic and it's probably rated R. There's one scene where Batman drops an F-bomb.
Fuck.
Fucking traffic.
It's so epic. He says he drops an F-bomb.
Fuck okay. Martha.
I fucked your mom, Superman. She's still pretty hot.
I don't know.
I'm still very, very excited for the new Justice League, but this is the most Zack Snyder shit. It's like, all right, Zach.
Yeah, but you're marketing towards a certain type of, I'll say person, but it's almost a certain type of dude with it.
He's marketing to other people named Zack, is exactly what he's doing.
Correct.
It's the Zack. It's just, it's not the even Snyder cut. It's just the Zack cut now. I'm Zack. Yeah, but CH or CK? A CH? Can't watch the movie.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, that doesn't count. That's like more Zachariah.
Get this targeted ad out to all Zacks across the country, please.
Get it out.
Cody's can also watch it too. It's like, yeah, like how Wisconsin enough. And Minnesota have the reciprocity for going to college there.
Do you think has a politician ever targeted ads to somebody with a specific first name?
They should. The people with certain names often are alike. I've found this across the world. Like every Britney I've ever met in my life has been the same, the exact same person. I bet like 20
guy, Britneys. The guy running named Mike, and you just blast it all to Mike's. Like, don't let this Mike represent all Mikes across the world.
Mikes are different only because there's too many Mikes, especially it's around true. Our age. Like our age group, like so for some reason, 90 to 97, like everybody was named Mike. So there's just the market's flooded with Mikes. So
there's a lot of Mikes, and then there was a lot of what was the other?
A lot of Ryans.
Yeah, that was a big one.
A lot of Ryans across both genders too. So that there's double pickup on there. I knew.
Yeah, like Meg Ryans.
This episode is brought to you by 3Chi, but I do believe, per usual, 3Chi, this Delta 8 company, a great alternative to marijuana, has sent us once again some content.
They have, as they're known to do. They've sent along here. I'm going to forward it over to you, Jeff, because they had me keep it under super octuple secrecy. But they sent over something for us. They saw us talking about something similar to this earlier, and they wanted to make us feel seen, so they sent this to us.
It's the only company that sends things to us with two-factor verification.
Exactly.
We'll debut the clip. This was a very exclusive private clip from 3Chi.
The first part of canon for fans of LCB. A long look at Cruz's bussy. The second part of canon for fans of LCB. And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The third part of canon for fans of LCB. Fuck up. More like down. And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The fourth part of canon for fans of LCB. Cooking meat outside. Fuck up. More like down. and a long look at Cruz's bussy. The fifth part of canon for fans of LCB. $75 haircut. Feet outside. Fuck up. More like down. And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The sixth part of canon for fans of LCB.
Lizzie.
$75 haircut.
Every week.
Cooking meat outside. The guy's too mean to Doug.
Ketamine, I need.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The seventh part of canon for fans of LCB.
Old Gus.
Lizzie.
$75 haircut.
Every week.
Babe, can you grill that chicken outside?
Lad the Browns.
Ketamine, I need.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The eighth part of canon for fans of LCB.
My Balloon Jerry shirt faded in the wash. Old Gus.
Lizzie.
$75 haircut.
Every
weekly.
Week.
I just hate the smell of pork.
Jason Tatum's 19.
Torture my cock and balls, you must.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The ninth part of canon for fans of LCB.
Kevin Sparrow, chill.
Goddamn Balloon Jerry.
Let me tell you something about Old Gus.
Sparing up vote for Red.
$75 haircut.
Are you cooking that beef on the stove?
The old bastard let his wife die.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The tenth part of canon for fans of LCB.
This two-story Apple store is pretty cool.
The chili. He spilled it.
Now, this is a big hog.
Lizzie, my ass.
$75 haircut.
Every week.
I don't care if I get sick cooking outside.
Taja strong.
Almost there, I am.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The 11th part of canon for fans of LCB.
Claire, let me tell you something about the Gaffner Peach.
Onsters!
Jerry, old Gus. He's dying.
Lizzie, my Reddit card.
$75 haircut.
Can we just order Bonefish Grill?
Mac is smart. More like Marcus really smart.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy. The 12th part of canon for fans of LCB.
Honey, I let really do our taxes and now we're fucked.
Cather Durand.
Mommy, pick me up, I fell down. Chili?
At least I can buy the This Is The Way hoodie. Oh, Gus.
Lizzie, you posted cringe.
$75 haircut.
The smell.
That guy just died. Tremendous.
Call you an Uber, I will.
And a long look at Cruz's bussy.
Bravo.
Wow. Unbelievable. It's incredible how much 3T knows about our podcast.
3T.
Day one listeners.
They've
been there. Kevin Spill 3G.
I was waiting. That's a future skit. I was waiting for, which we got to talk about him in a minute, but we'll hold off on that. I was waiting for Netflix political character to make his debut in that song. That seemed inevitable.
It was just a matter of time once you get past version one.
That's such a recent development too.
it's firmly wow. Insisted into the canon.
Like we got off of the blacklist stuff and we just needed the hard shit.
I mean, it's all because you referenced a side character in the show.
Yeah, exactly. Literally because you mentioned Kathy Durand.
Wow, incredible stuff by 3G. That is just top tier. That's a great Christmas song. 3G, pronounced 3G, 3CHI is the industry leader, as you guys know at this point, guys and gals know, in Delta-H THC products, all products formulated by a biochemist, all products made in the USA and USA-grown hemp. And when they released their Delta-H products, they're the first federally legal THC products sold in the USA since Prohibition started almost 90 years ago. That's right. It is a more functional alternative to marijuana for those who want the same great feelings without the negative side effects. Delta 8 will have you feeling amazing, yet functional and clear-headed instead of lazy and paranoid. And 3G isn't just the best in the Delta industry. Like we said, they invented it for 100% hemp-derived federal legal products. You can go to 3G.com, the number 3CHI.com, and you can find them at select retailers around the country as well. Must be 21 to purchase. Go to 3G.com to shop for Delta 8 vapes, gummies, tinctures and oils that can be used to make homemade edibles. Use code CAMERA, CAMERA, spell the word camera, at checkout to see 5% off your order. Must be 21 to purchase. Great Christmas gift for people, folks, or Hanukkah, whatever you celebrate. 3G.com, code CAMERA. Moving on, more news. we'll rip through this rest of this news here. This was a weird one. Lily James and Tommy Lee are going to start a new limited series for Hulu. They oddly did announce this one during the Disney Plus thing. I wonder why. Lily James and Sebastian Stan are going to play Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee in a new limited series for Hulu. This one caught me off guard. I have no idea what to expect on this one. This would be quite the debut if they looped Hulu into Disney Plus. This is like the first series they dropped.
It's weird because when I look at them visually, I think some people had issues with the casting. I don't doubt that either Lily James or Sebastian Stan can do it, but they're both too beautiful of people to be playing these two people. Like they're grimy. Like they're both grimy people. And I don't mean that necessarily as an insult. That's kind of the essence of who they were. So I don't understand the casting from that aspect. And especially considering we just saw Machine Gun Kelly play Tommy Lee to perfection in the Dirt. So it's a little bit weird, I think, that casting. But I do think it's a really interesting concept only because like that their kind of battle and their legal battle kind of like shapes sex tape culture moving forward and like how America kind of, I don't know, absorbed it. And that, and you know, sex tape culture led to many different things, the Kardashian empire included. So I don't know. Interesting to see the privacy law end of it.
I just think this is like if we got an American to play James Bond, you can't get non-Americans to play Tommy Lee and Pamela, who's basically like our king and queen.
Sebastian Stan is American, I think.
No, well, Lily James, I mean.
Yeah, she's no, definitely sure. Not.
Okay. Well, also Pamela Anderson, I think, is Canadian.
It doesn't matter. It's
she's definitely Canadian.
It doesn't matter.
Pretty sure she got discovered at like a Canadian football
league. That wasn't you made a very funny point in comparison until it fell apart.
It doesn't matter. My point still stands.
I mean, obviously, what you're saying is in jest, but you know that somebody replied to comments on somewhere on social media like, "Oh, I mean, Americans be playing these Americans here. These heroes."
I mean, if Pamela Lee Anderson is not American, then explain Barbed Wire, the most American movie ever.
True.
Inspired the barbed wire tattoo. I don't know if that's true. I'm just gonna say it is. It's my thing.
Seems like that would follow up right. I think one did come before the other.
Barbara Wire. That's my mom. That's my mom's name. But your mom named you after herself. Yeah, Barb Wire Jr. I'm working on it.
What a picture.
That's a bottom-tier joke, but a top-tier laugh. National Film Registry adds a bunch of new movies, as they always do, 25 new movies. And I'll read you the list. Actually, I'm not going to read all 25, but I'll read some of them. The Blues Brothers, A Clockwork Orange. Surprised that wasn't in there already. The Dark Knight, Grease, The Hurt Locker. Let's see what else here. The main one is that people were stunned that they added Shrek. I think Shrek, people have this very odd, because of memes and Smash Mouth, people have this very odd remembrance of Shrek, I think. Uh-huh. Shrek was a really good movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. People kind of joked about it. I'm like, well, this isn't surprising. Like, if you're adding animated movies, Shrek absolutely has to go in there. Like, I don't know what was so, like, I think memes and, like, and the idea of Smash Mouth have made people forget that was a real, like, it's not that I'm not saying it's like underrated, don't get me wrong, but I just think there's a weird like discussion around Shrek where it's like, this was a really good movie.
I feel like Shrek is Nicky's. We got Toy Story in 95, right? And then they released Bug's Life, and then what was the Pixar movie in that current time? Was it Monsters Inc., or is that 2002? But I do feel like Shrek was the second really large CGI movie. Like, I feel like Toy Story was big, and then Pixar got a lot of buzz, and then they released, you know, Bug's Life after that, and there was ants and all that stuff. But Shrek was the next one that actually felt like somewhat of a phenomenon in the same way Toy Story was. And I think all of that's just due to the fact that it's just a super enjoyable movie with a really good cast, and it's really funny. Because in terms of animation, I never think of Shrek as, like, one of the you know, I never put Shrek up there when I think of, you know, 2000s era CGI animation.
It was a game breaker in a sense, right? Like, I do think that you're right in that the meme culture did definitely tarnish the reputation of it from the a newer generation standpoint. But I think adults and people who were kids in that at the time when it came out, like, both remember it with the same level of fondness. And again, it is a very, very good movie. There's no disputing that.
Well, it also it charted a different path to be its own successful computer generated movie, which was pretty much associated with Pixar at the time by like having elements of grown up humor in it. And yeah. Like, I mean, not like grown up. I mean, some of the stuff is like, you know, fart jokes and whatnot, but almost like it's a cliche to say, well, you can watch it. There's jokes only adults would get. But like part of that, you kind of like, part of that when you're a kid, when you watch it, is like, you know, you don't get it and you can still kind of enjoy it because you know, there's something kind of off about it. So I think it's even fun in that respect. It has a little more of an edge than the Pixar movies ever did. And I think that made Shrek be its own thing. And that was a big deal at the time. Then they kind of just ran the franchise. I'd say they ran the franchise into the ground, but they
milked every single ounce that they could get out of it.
Yeah, they kind of like, you know, veered into a column in a parking garage while backing their car in a little bit with like Shrek the Third and all those movies. They just didn't take it in the right direction and know how to end it, I guess. Mike Myers was demanding $47 million a movie.
Think about it this way: if there was no Shrek one, there'd be no Croods. Shrek ran or walked so they could run.
Probably
both DreamWorks.
I mean, DreamWorks, you have to think like Steven Spielberg's career's over if Shrek fails.
The best story about that movie is still the fact they reanimated the entire thing.
Yes.
Because Mike Myers wanted to do a Scottish accent after Chris Farley passed away. Just had to redo the whole movie.
It was a smart move, though. It was a smart move.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. It absolutely worked.
Just imagine David Geffen watching Shrek for the first time. His company... he went into with Spielberg and Katzenberg, and he's just like, they just send him a screener. It's like, okay, this is a movie they've been working on. Like he just, you know, turns it on. He's like, okay, I got this band I signed called Smash Mouth. I'm going to put them in this movie. I don't even know if that's true, but that sounds like a good backstory for how that song made in the movie.
Geffen is one of those guys that he posted about I'm self-isolating. This is hard. Like while he was on a 100-foot yacht or something. He's one of those dudes, I think, did that.
Oh, yeah. Well, so David Geffen, along with, is it Larry Ellison of Oracle?
Ellison worked together on something. I remember that much, right?
Well, they're the big, like, yacht guys.
Oh, that's it. Okay.
Like, they're the uber billionaire yacht guys known for their big old yachts.
Mm-hmm. Big time boat boys.
Last two pieces of news here, both interesting in their own right for different reasons. Seth MacFarlane is going to reboot Revenge of the Nerds with the Lucas Brothers, and the film will be a commentary on modern nerd culture and what constitutes a geek in the 21st century.
I'm sorry, what was that? What are they rebooting?
Revenge of the Nerds. What did I say?
No, I just missed it.
Oh, okay, no. Yeah.
I was looking up Larry Ellison and his yacht.
I almost Googled it as well. I don't blame you. This is a tough movie to make in the 21st century, so I give him credit for trying to mix it up, because we've talked about it before. Like, the idea of the nerd is very different than it was even 10 years ago. I mean, nerd culture is just pop culture at this point.
He's got to stop and he's got to focus on what's important and what everyone is asking for, which is a million and one ways to die in the West.
he's waiting for the right moment, he said. Yeah.
I just want him to bring back Cleveland Show.
Man, Cleveland Show, what happened there?
It wasn't good. It was not good.
The most relevant thing the Cleveland Show did was bring characters into the Star Wars Family Guy specials.
Yeah. I forgot about that. Damn. What a move. American Dad, though, great spinoff.
American Dad, very funny. They got the good spinoff team on American Dad. Cleveland Show just was kind of very flimsy in its premise. I agree with the commentary on geek culture. I don't know how to classify geek culture anymore. And as an actual geek growing up in high school, I feel somewhat betrayed. by its popularity because
you were a weeb nerd, which is a different level of nerd from the regular nerds they're portraying in Revenge of the Nerds.
I would say it's more investments in a certain branch of the skill tree of nerd. Yes.
Yeah, you're the corporal rat.
There's nerds, and you can go in, like, you used to be able, like in the 2000s, you had to invest into certain branches of the nerd tree. You could put all your chips in anime, or you could put some in anime and some in Star Wars and Star Trek, or other things like that. Now Star Wars, Star Trek, Marvel, all those things are just kind of general interest. But I will say, I do remember comic book nerds being the cooler nerds.
Well, if they're the reading nerds, does that make them cooler?
No, but they're just, they like the big old buff superheroes rather than like the fucking, space dorks. So I always felt...
waifu pillows?
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what Seth MacFarlane takes this because like he certainly, I think he had a big hand in helping popularize nerd culture or at least...
break the stigma more than anything else. Yeah.
Well, we're just by way of like references, like, make referencing things funny. References became their own joke format. And I've certainly used it a lot. Like my go-to is just a reference of product in the past. Whenever I can't get a laugh, I'm like, is anyone remember Dunkaroos? And I was like, yeah.
So
it works. But like, his premises were always like, like nerdy shit or like 70s sitcoms and things like that. So then of course, like, Family Guy is something I think like a lot of nerds watched. And so his perspective on it would be quite interesting, I guess. But now, yeah, you're right. I don't even know like what to classify a nerd anymore. Cause there's like nerds. There's like light side nerds and dark side nerds.
Yes. I was about to say, yeah, you don't want to go too deep on either side. Cause like, what are you going to make fun of? Incel shit and all that. And like Gamergate people, like, I don't know what direction you take it in. Are gamers considered nerds even anymore? I mean, like fucking Nick Merckx is making $50 trillion a year. Like, I don't know what direction you go in with that.
Yeah. Like,
but I guess that's the point, right? What do you classify as a nerd? So maybe he has a better idea of what he's doing than we do.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. Seth MacFarlane's probably got more figured out than I do. I'll give him that much.
He's got a great voice.
Last thing here. This is from Stereo Gum. Scott Stapp playing Frank Sinatra in Ronald Reagan biopic.
Yeah.
That's a headline that writes itself.
We recorded that first.
Yeah.
They didn't give us credit. We were on that. We've been on that since day one in terms of saying
Scott. Complete no-brainer.
I said from the first episode of the podcast, I'm like, if they ever do a Ronald Reagan biopic, you know who they should get to play Frank Sinatra?
It's Scott Stapp.
Scott Stapp from Creed.
I forget who's playing. Is it Dennis Quaid as Reagan in this one, right?
Hold me now. I'm 6 feet from the ledge and I'm thinking maybe 6 feet ain't so far down. Sammy!
No, Scott, you have to do his songs, his style. Yeah.
I didn't do Iran Contra.
I did it my word.
This is a whole ballad about Iran Contra.
What if like you went, like I go to a wedding and then like before like things start happening, they always play Frank Sinatra music no matter where you are in the country. Yeah. What if instead you just start playing Creed music?
Yeah, that should be the norm. We as a society have moved past the need to listen to Frank Sinatra.
There was a friend today. I got a child and he's really cool. This song's for my son.
I missed my sacrifice. Much better song.
I sacrifice.
And that wasn't Human Clay, though. Human Clay was with arms wide open.
That was a song he wrote for his kid, I think.
Yeah, and that's a great one. That's a legitimately great song.
Creed had at least four really great songs.
I would say that. I would say Mag Sacrifice. I would say One Last Breath. Great song. And there's one more I'm missing because I'm just blanking. Human Clay, I remember having a really weird album art, right? They had the weird... Was that the one we were talking about?
It looked like the Silver Surfer rising.
There was the tree one, and then was
the tree was the one with My Sacrifice.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you are with me.
Yeah, that's
What if we everyone has a Creed impression?
What if they're just like a Scott Stapp barbershop quartet, but they all sound like Scott Stapp, so there's no variation?
Yeah, and they don't go like B to G or tenor range. Or whatever.
No,
it just sounds like one guy. Yeah,
yeah, but they're just harmonizing as Scott Stapp. That's all they.
For the longest time.
Actually, that would be amazing. The Stampedes. The Staplers.
I just want a barbershop quartet to sing The Longest Time.
I'm sure that exists. You absolutely
definitely somewhere.
As somebody who, for our radio show, I have to find stuff like that all the time, that absolutely exists.
Oh, no, I think it's a pretty well-known like barbershop quartet modern standard of sorts. But I just want to, I want that in person. And that's what I miss since having COVID. It's having a nice steak, having a nice steak dinner at Longhorn Steakhouse.
Yeah, that's right. And getting the quartet to serenade you.
All right, let's get into Let Them All Talk, an HBO Max original. It stars Meryl Streep, Candace Bergen, Diane West, Lucas Hedges, Gemma Chan. It's from Steven Soderbergh. Steven Soderbergh has done obviously many things people know. My favorite movie of all time, Ocean's 11, but many, many other movies from Magic Mike. I think the one last year he did was The Laundromat.
Oh, that was a stinker.
That was a bad movie.
Big time stinker. That's the same vibe as this.
Logan Lucky, all the Ocean's movies.
Great movie.
Contagion, which has been a very relevant movie recently. I mean, I go down the list. It's Steven Soderbergh. I think he retired at one point. This movie is interesting for why it is what it is. And let's just say off the bat, what the movie's about. An author goes on a boat trip with her friends and nephew in an effort to find fun and come to terms with her past. She's also trying to write a book, a lot about her past with her friends. She's kind of being looked on by her nephew, who's played by Lucas Hedges, and her literary agent, Gemma Chan, trying to figure out like what she's writing. She's writing a sequel. She's a very, very famous author. They've made a mini series, like a movie based off her books.
She's the Dan Stevens of this universe. She wrote a Da Vinci Code type book.
Correct. Yeah.
Dan Brown. This universe. Dan Stevens.
Who's Dan Stevens?
He's the actor
who played the Beast in Beauty and the Beast. I was going to just let that one go. So this movie, was essentially all complete improv.
Really?
It was a movie written by Deborah Eisenberg, and this is what it says. I'll read you the notes from Wikipedia. Production began in August 2019 in New York City and continued on board the RMS Queen Mary II as it crossed the Atlantic, lasting 2 weeks. Soderbergh only used a story outline written by Eisenberg and allowed the actors to improvise much of their dialogue. Soderbergh served as the film editor and cinematographer. According to West, Soderbergh held the camera in a wheelchair and just rolled along. And the sound was the only equipment used. Even if you didn't know that, there is a point where you would definitely go, oh, this is improv. This is not based off a script.
It's so stammery.
Yes. And it has a lot of very Steven Soderbergh touches, a lot of like montages with the music that you'll recognize from all of his movies. So I think we're all on three different ends of the spectrum here. I actually kind of liked the movie. I didn't love it, but I kind of enjoyed it. Like, I thought it was like a nice, definitely meandering at times trip and story of friendship. I thought the acting was really very good. The improv was solid. It is not for everybody. Absolutely not for everybody. This is a turn it off in 5 minutes if you're the wrong type of person for this. And even so, like, this is a type of movie that I definitely enjoy, but I didn't even love this one a ton. I gave it a 73. Rotten Tomatoes, critics have it very high. It's in the 90s, I believe. Audiences have it around the 50% for approval rating. There's a couple moments in this movie that made me laugh. There's a couple, like, major spoilers if you don't want to watch, so tune out if you don't want it spoiled. But it's also not a big blockbuster, so I'm not going to do the time code thing here. I'm sorry. Don't feel like it. We'll get to those moments in a second. I thought the acting was very good. I like the improv. I thought the story was at least mildly intriguing and interesting throughout. I was curious where it was going, like what she was going to do with her book. kind of the back and forth. I thought some of the improv was funny too. There's a couple good chuckles. Like, again, it's a very C-minus movie for me. And I will say I'm definitely giving some extra bonus points for how it was made. I thought it was, a neat attempt. This is the quote from Role Models. I like the idea of it more than I actually like it. I think that's what how I'm going to describe it. But I definitely like it more than I think the two of you do. Kenjack, I'll start with you next. I think you saw it before all of us. And I think you're in between maybe myself and Trill.
Yeah, so the movie's a bore. It's an absolute and total bore. It's a 64 out of 100, just to get that off the chest quickly. And I know it sounds like it should be lower considering how bored I was by it, but I do think I agree that there was some very good acting in this. I think it's mostly confined to Gemma Chan, who was awesome. And I would say Lucas Hedges was really good in it too. And especially since a lot of this obviously was ad-libbed or whatever the term.
I mean, the really awkward scene between him and Gemma Chan where he was like asking to kiss her. That was just good, great acting from each of them because it was painfully awkward. I actually almost had to pause it for a second. It's like, I don't want to watch this happen.
So their back and forth, I think, was awesome, and like their stories and stuff were cool. And I do like part of the improv of it because the conversations feel real, because in a sense they kind of in a little bit are. So that authentic part of it was cool, and that's what boosts this above trash, because this is a very, very fucking boring movie. It is a pain to get through, and I think a lot of our audience members will probably not like it. I think a decent like the chunk that really do like this movie are going to like it a lot. I did not enjoy particularly Meryl Streep a lot. I think she was doing kind of like, what was her Devil Wears Prada character, Miranda, right? She's doing like Miranda Priestly on Xanax. Like, it was just a slightly muted version of that character, and it just didn't appeal to me at all. I didn't really enjoy either of the other two old ladies. I don't think they did much. Best part of the movie was when Meryl Streep died at the end and the credits rolled.
Okay. It's just now that you said it. I laughed out loud. I'm sorry.
So sudden. It was like it felt like a prank. It was like the guy was like, she's dead. And Lucas Hedges is like,
oh no.
It was like, was this the first take? Because he didn't know where to improv.
Yeah, but I think he realizes too that, because remember when she said like that man is keeping my life alive or something like that, like I think he realized that something was wrong, and that's why she was in the state she was in.
Yeah.
But I think the story comes together well too. Like, I don't think, like, I would agree, I think there are many who find this boring. I like movies that kind of don't have a purpose or a point. Not that this doesn't have a purpose or point, like there's a sadness and emotional punch to it, but like things that do kind of feel like it's not a lot's happening. Like, I do just enjoy that sometimes. But when he said she died, I laughed out loud.
It's
just like, oh, okay.
The person who tweeted, like, there's some movies that are just a vibe. Like, this movie's just a vibe. It's just a vibe. And the vibe is watching Meryl Streep wake up dead, blue as a fucking... Well,
the other one, too, is that you said it the other day. You're like, stop singing. Stop singing. Mm-hmm. And when she dies... And they have this montage of what they do after she dies. She's singing over it.
She's obsessed. She's obsessed with singing. And in late stage,
her character's dead, and she's singing. And I was like, I laughed. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. How did they shoehorn in her singing? And it's like when we watched what was the movie Holiday, and Kristen Chenoweth didn't sing. Like, that was this with me. I was like, holy shit, she didn't sing? She didn't shoehorn in singing? Meryl Streep did the Kristen Chenoweth.
The Sheriff Bobblehead didn't sing?
Yeah.
And Bobbleheads?
I cannot believe you gave that movie a 15, by the way. I apologized on your behalf that you gave it a 15 in my blog about it.
The movie just hates us so much that you almost kind of respect it from
pure disdain for us as viewers.
Sorry, Kendrick, you can finish because I had
no. That's basically it. It's a grueling movie to get through. It should not have been number one 2 hours. It just shouldn't have been. You could easily have cut this movie down quite a bit. And I do think that there was some cool stuff. Again, I think the authentic feel of the dialogue was great, but also in some sense bad, because like you were saying, Trill, it is a little stammery. But it's just so fucking boring, man. It's just so fucking boring. And I couldn't, it was very, very difficult to get through. And props to me and props to all three of us, except, well, actually, no props to you, Jeff, because you liked the movie. So props to me and Trill for soldiering through.
I enjoyed going through it. Correct. Trill, you seem to very much not like it. You at one point said you were going to turn it off.
Yeah.
I mean, you were quite disgusted with this movie, actually.
Yeah, I think it's a bad movie. I don't think it's a good movie. It's a 40 for me. I get people saying there's artistic merits, but it was such a non-event that it almost didn't seem like worth making a movie out of. But I do think a lot of that's just what I like and what I don't like. And I like what I don't like out of movies are kind of like these overindulgent views into like a writer or an artist. And there's like a whole bunch of that shit. Like, I don't care if someone's a writer. Like, I just feel like we get a lot of pieces of art about the creative process because the artists making the art go through the creative process themselves. And they're just tied to things I don't understand because I'm just not creative in that particular way. And for me, that's what like seems like where it's just that's where it just seems like watching. It's like, oh, okay. Like, let me just have some more conversations. The only part of this movie I enjoyed was the Lucas Hedges, Gemma Chan relationship.
Yes.
Where my dude just got friend zoned harder than anyone I've seen in the movies in a while. And I felt that I've been there, man. But like that was like they're acting together in terms of the improv. Like that actually felt somewhat authentic in a movie where I thought that Lucas Hedges probably did the most annoying job out of all of them. In terms of like that improv, just being of the, it was kind of like almost like around The Office where, you know, in the mid 2000s and the early 10s where like the whole improv movie or show kind of took off, or semi improv thing. And then that was advertised as a feature for a while. And people were like really into that because it was like some great show of creative display by the actors or comedians like representing it out. But to me, that whole thing just feels like that whole stammery thing seems overly done. Like you're trying too hard to replicate like what a normal conversation might have, and you're just finding the wrong breaks, and it feels unnatural. And then that's where it kind of comes in and just feels overly improvised, and makes me feel weird. And I don't really love it. The one person I really enjoyed in this movie though, cause I enjoy her in everything, is Candace Bergen. I thought like as a character, she was the only character that was actually interesting. And therefore like the ending kind of made sense to me from that standpoint, which is why I'm still giving this movie a 40, but I just found it not my, it's not my thing, man.
Not your bag.
I don't like it. It's not a good movie to me, and I'm not going to give it points for, I don't know. I just don't feel like giving this one points because it didn't, like, it's like Jeff, like you're saying, it's like, you know, maybe if you're a cinematographer, someone that can appreciate it more, you like understand what Soderbergh did with like the lighting and all the, you know, the whole process behind it. But like in terms of a cohesive piece of art, a cinematic experience, it just doesn't deliver on anything other than just having that to offer. And then maybe, you know, giving Meryl Streep another chance to wear some like really, really thick dark frame glasses.
It has a lot of those little touches with Soderbergh movies in terms of like what you're looking at and what you're listening to that I do like quite a bit. So I favor it in that sense. But no, I mean, it's one of those. We've had a bunch of those recently where you turn it off and you're like, man, I can, people are going to fucking hate this movie. People are just not going to have the time of day. And I would agree. I think Lucas Hedges and Gemma Chan are probably the best part, especially because like there was like almost an impending doom with his character where you even like, he was really good at making that awkward. Like that's what I think impressed me most, is that it was like mostly improv, and just like him like reaching with his hand to hold her hand at the planetarium. And you're like, don't do it. You know, you're going to get rejected. And then he doesn't. And you're like, all right, well, you give him some hope, and then he does. He just like, can I kiss you? You're like, oh, you're like, no. You're like,
what would you do if I kissed you right now, ma'am?
Blew it big time.
Well, he didn't really blow it. She just wasn't like, she never really.
Oh yeah, that's true. She was never interested.
She was like kind of interested, but like, you know, the whole hand holding thing, like, could have just been like a polite, like, I'm not going to do anything because this situation's so temporary and I don't know how this guy's going to react or whatever. But like, other than that, like, she, I don't feel like she ever gave him any signals that she was interested other than like wanting to hang out.
I liked his follow up afterwards, where he was like kind of stammering through explaining to Meryl Streep like what he's like, I made a fool of myself or something. I forget exactly what he said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like I did embarrassed. Yeah, something like that. But yeah, but then the only reason, real reason you figured she wanted to hang out in the first place was because she wanted proximity to Meryl Streep's character.
Yeah, she was using him.
Yeah. And so, like, I guess from a character standpoint, like, I liked his character. I found him to be very annoying in this movie. And maybe that worked for you. Like, that was kind of the intent, but it almost like when you just have all that stammering and the I'm improvising right now, so I gotta this is how people really talk or whatever. It feels weird to me, man.
Yeah, I don't know, like, there's not even like a crazy amount for me to say on. I think this is where it falls into us being just like the average moviegoer, average movie watcher.
Blessing and a curse.
Yeah, I I'm sure there's things even we didn't notice, or like things that like people who are more actor based or director based can like really pick up on. But I don't know. Like I think Soderbergh too. Like he did a whole movie on his phone. On
that one was good. Yeah,
I did like Unsane quite a bit. Yeah.
Claire Foy.
So I think maybe that's my thing too. Like I definitely have when I appreciate an attempt at something, I definitely give it higher points. Maybe that's like a bit of a flaw in my rating scale, but like I appreciate like his commitment to making this feel incredibly natural and authentic. And there's just sometimes where acting for me just takes over and I'm like, I just can't deny the good acting. So
our boy Lucas, not in an A24 movie. And I'm also about that. Good for him.
Yeah.
Getting some of that Netflix dough.
Kind of looks like a young Steve Zahn.
I could see it. It's a little bit of a different nose, but
He'll play Zahn in the Zahn biopic.
In the Sahara reboot.
Son of Zahn. It's just Matthew McConaughey sitting there. Zahn! His hand on the ass on the glass, actually.
Yeah, I just Googled Lucas Hedges looks like Steve Zahn.
How many results? A lot, I'm assuming.
No, I don't know. He's got a zonular...
son of Zahn.
Zonular appearance.
So, Ken Jack, you gave it a 64? 64. Yeah. I gave it a 73. Trill, a 40. Audience, not many votes on this one. How many people have seen it? Gave it a 67.
Sounds about right. Split everybody.
Yeah. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom is a movie we're reviewing on Sunday. It's a movie that is getting some decent Oscar hype. Tensions rise when trailblazing blues singer Ma Rainey and her band gather at a recording studio in Chicago in 1927. Stars Chadwick Boseman. And I believe one of his final roles that we'll see of him in Viola Davis as well. They're both getting a lot of Oscar buzz. So we'll be reviewing that. That's on Netflix. And then The Midnight Sky is next week as well. Very excited for both of these movies. Kind of ramping up the quality here of what we're going to be getting. So we'll be reviewing those this weekend and then next week. Trill.
Can we talk about the Tom Cruise thing real quick?
Yes, we should talk about the Tom Cruise thing real quick. I did forget.
Was that a shoot?
Oh, yeah.
Was that a shoot or a work?
You worked yourself into a shoot, brother. Hell yeah.
I kind of feel like it was a work.
You mean like he had his assistant recording that?
Yeah, I kind of feel like it was just a thing to put out there to show how seriously they're taking the COVID stuff.
Which I could see that being a directive from Miscavige being like, hey, you need to get a video out there so people know you're fighting hard for the industry. And like what he was saying was completely correct. The delivery was maybe a little intense for professional work environment, but at the same time, sometimes that's what you got to do to get people on board. And I've seen my own bosses, not this job, but other jobs, say much worse things. So,
yeah, I don't know. You know, maybe he was yelling at people, and his general point is, you're right, probably correct. But like, anytime anyone goes into the whole like, we work hard to pay your bills or whatever thing, or like whatever he said. You kind of like that has like big, do you know who I am sort of vibes. But if anyone can do that, you know what? Fuck it. Tom Cruise.
I feel like my thing with this is I think of that video of him going to see Tenet.
Oprah?
Oh. No, yeah, where he goes to see Tenet. And he's like, movies. And he like sits in front of like the poster and he puts his two thumbs. Like, I think there's a lot of passion. And like, I don't know. It's, I get the people who are like, why are we hyping him up for this? But I don't know.
I mean, ultimately, it doesn't matter. People enjoyed it either way. It didn't have the same like vitriol that the Bale one had.
The Bale one was out of anger of like a personal thing on set. This one was Cruise is like, this isn't like if Henry Cavill did this right on the last Mission Impossible, I'd be like, that's a little weird, right? Like he's the actor. Like Tom Cruise is like his lifeblood. Like this movie, this franchise at this point, like him and Chris McQuarrie, like it's their thing. He's not just Ethan Hunt. So I get it to that extent.
And he's well known for being like one of the most intense actors in the world. Like that is partially his brand. That's his brand, right? Like if like you were saying, if it was like a non-Methodist actor, not a method actor or something like that, or like just like a regular nice dude. Like if Owen Wilson did this on a set, I'd be like, what the fuck is happening right now? But Tom Cruise, it's completely expected.
Well, there's always that joke though, that nobody ever does method of a really nice guy. Like method in itself is like just an excuse to
play a bad guy.
But I don't know. I thought it was funny. Like I felt bad, but like, you know what? Follow the protocols. But at the same time, the part of me that was like, is this a conspiracy theory?
That was my first thought. I was like, I feel like this was staged to show how compliant they are. Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I'm not excusing it. And I think there's people who are like, I'm not excusing him of the ability to like not yell at people, but like for this situation, I was like, like, all right. Like if it was like, you didn't get my coffee properly, then I think that I'd have a harder time standing to Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise.
Or even the Bale thing. The Bale thing was over like a fucking lighting guy getting in the middle of a shot while he's doing Terminator Salvation.
You're stepping in me light.
Exactly.
You're stepping in me light there.
Like, that's being a dick. And, like, method or not, that's just being a dick. But when you're, like, jeopardizing the safety of your entire crew in one of, like, the only big blockbusters filming, that's a little bit of a different story.
Yeah, I'll that's why, like, whatever. Like, I'm sure people would disagree with what I'm saying right now, but I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, too, because the context may matter in that. Because he said that he's like, I've said it again. Like, I'm tired of your apologies on this. Like, just fucking stop.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a method actor. I'm the lead of the new Pickup Artist movie.
I'm playing mystery.
Trill, bracket time.
All right, guys. This bracket, we're in the holiday spirit. We're opening stuff, right? Opening gifts, maybe, you know, whatever. Yeah. Opening packages. This is a bracket of the most satisfying packaging to open. Packaging or food packaging. And so we're just thinking the whole experience, like how it feels when you crack it open, the way it made you feel as a kid, the way it smells, the way it tastes, those sort of things, like all on the table here. So use your imagination. But the first matchup is a video game / compact disc versus a yogurt lid.
Okay. So wait, what part of the video, the whole plastic?
Think about tearing the shrink wrap off. If it was like back in the day, you had to get the sticker off the top and then crack it open, get the instruction manual, you smelled the plastic in there.
Depends on the type of game, because some consoles do the thing where they put the sticker over the grip part, you know, the gorilla grip part where you rip it open, you bust it open with your hands.
Yeah, so you crack the case.
Exactly. That part I don't like. I do enjoy where they have the little triangular folds of plastic at the brims and you break those parts open, but sometimes they're too difficult, so I'll go yogurt. Yogurt's always easy, plus you get to lick the lid.
Well, yeah, but opening up a yogurt lid's kind of satisfying too in its own way, because
that's what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna peel this back.
First of all, it's not even really yogurt, it's just custard. Like French Wheat to French style yogurt is unbelievable.
Custard's just yogurt with eggs, right?
Sure.
I don't know.
I'll take your word for it. Where are you voting?
I'm going to go with video game compact disc. I think that this is one of the most satisfying packages to ever open. And especially, I'm sorry, I'm yawning. Especially as a kid or a teenager, when you got like a double disc video game or double disc CD, and you know, you like went through that. And then back in the day, getting an instruction manual out, like flipping through that in the car ride back home from the place you bought the video game in anticipation of playing the video game.
Want me to open one up right now? Want to bust one open?
Yeah, it's, I don't find the yogurt lid very satisfying.
See, what I do on the video game, and Ken Jack,
you get the yogurt on your fucking fingers and shit.
Yeah, I kind of like it. The Ken Jack voted yogurt lid. We're going to move video games on. See, you started peeling the copy of John Wick from the corner. I like to puncture the tension in the finger slots of the clamshell.
Wait, is this thing double? Oh, never mind.
You know what I'm saying? I like to take my thumb and I like to bust into the tension of the shrink wrap where you put your fingers to open it.
Damn, this is really poorly packaged. But it was only $4. So good Blu-ray purchase on my part.
You crack it open and smell it though. Get that new disc smell. Okay. Tell me everything. Oh yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, it's good. That's good smell. That's why I gotta have that beating out yogurt. All right, we're moving on.
Oh damn. They give me a digital copy with the physical copy too. That's kind of sick.
Oh, good job. Now you can watch John Wick. Why do you get two John Wick discs?
I got two discs. I think let's see. Well, one's the DVD and one's the Blu-ray.
They're really $4. Going all out. The next one is an action figure, like a blister pack action figure versus Cadbury eggs.
Oh, I mean,
action figure by far.
Action figure. Blister packs will like have to cut it up with the scissors.
No, I mean, just like the normal.
The twisties on the back, you got to unleash blister packs.
Blister pack's the wrong word. That's the, they have a name for them. Like, yeah, but just like the cardboard. With the plastic glue. No, it's the cardboard with the plastic glued to the cardboard, like Jeff's Star Wars action figures.
Yeah, like the old Kenner toys. No, those for sure.
Yeah, where like did you ever do it like very like precision, like where you would put a knife into the plastic, or did you just rip the cardboard out?
No, you don't want to rip the card. Yeah, well, at least I wouldn't want to rip the card. I'd save the card. But then you realize later on, you're like, well, that was stupid because if I opened it anyway, who gives a shit about the card? But like the card is. Like with the Kenner, at least that was a big deal. And then the ones when I was a kid, I mean, those were not as like iconic, but I still like them that way. Yeah.
The communicator chip can't damage it.
Have to. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. For the Gillette Fusion razor that they made.
The new gun ray. I got to use my new gun ray communicator chip. Oh, sorry. That wasn't me. That was my new gun ray communicator chip.
So where are you going, Trill? What are you voting?
I got to go action figure. A Cadbury egg sucked to open. That was kind of my that was my test. I just wanted to see if anybody. I would like it if they made Cadbury eggs that came in an actual egg carton but didn't have the wrapping on it, so you didn't have to unwrap the
oh, that'd be beautiful. Actually, great idea.
Mm-hmm. The next one is a shoebox with new shoes versus a Capri Sun.
Capri Sun. Like, what do you mean? Like, you have to when you just punch open the hole on a Capri Sun?
Yeah.
Versus like physically just opening the cardboard box of a shoebox.
Yeah.
I got to go Capri Sun.
I hate opening a Capri Sun. To me, there's nothing better than just opening the cardboard on a new pair of shoes.
Yeah, I'm going to go shoes, especially because like the wrapping as well. And it's got a nice smell.
Oh, you get that new Nike smell. The like Nike especially, backshot air. Especially when they remember when they still made Nikes out of the fake leather, like before everything was like fly knit or synthetic material. Or plastic, and this you just like, oh, it smelled so good. It smelled so good.
I like the punch. I like busting it open. Makes me feel strong.
I knew a lot of kids in elementary school who lacked the fine motor skills from gaming like I did, that they couldn't punch into the Capri Sun the normal way, so they punched into the bottom of the Capri Sun. Like, they fucking didn't
Savage?
Have, they just fucking didn't idiots. Have the dexterity of grip to navigate that sharp Capri Sun straw into the wrapper itself. Is that Mimosa or is that a cat?
That's Mimosa. She's making a lot of noise, so I'm now picking her up.
All right, the final matchup is.
By the way, I'm actually nothing worse than a straw problem with Capri Sun.
Yes,
you know, where the straw was. Have you ever opened a straw and the end of the straw is closed, never fully opened? I've had that.
I had that once.
McDonald's, that happened to me. The end was closed.
Sometimes when you bend the straw and then you perforate it, so now when you try and suck it up, there's just a leakage problem, and you can't get the suction you need.
It's like getting a Prince Albert and pee coming out everywhere.
Exactly like that.
Capri Suns are an overrated juice beverage, in my opinion.
Don't love them.
I don't like them. I don't know why. I don't know why my mom ever got Capri Suns. I prefer the high C juice boxes, the Ecto Coolers of the world.
Yeah, and those are better.
Mm-hmm. Parents that really there's a spectrum of this. Either your parents really loved you, or they didn't give a shit about you. And you got the Kool-Aid coolers with the shape like a beer bottle with the twist off thing. Cause a lot of parents said they had too much sugar and a lot of parents just didn't care. I don't know. Never got those.
Good comparison.
I grew up fat anyway.
I kind of want some IC. All right.
My parents didn't let me drink that, but they let me drink soda when I came home from school. Don't really get that logic, but
it's a weird reverse. Yeah. Usually it's the opposite.
I don't know, man. I was playing football, so I guess they figured I needed the calories. I just became a really fat fourth grader. So, and the last one is a package of Tic Tacs versus the Nature's container of banana.
I'm allergic to banana, so that kind of sucks. But
you're allergic to banana?
Yeah.
How are you just figuring out about this?
No, he definitely told us that before. He's told us that before.
It sucks. It sucks. I love banana. I love throwing them in shakes and.
He said he's allergic to bandanas before.
Sorry. He's allergic to red bandanas. C's for life. I'm going to go with Tic Tacs only because there's repackaging ability to it, and that you keep opening and closing the container all day.
You flip with your thumb. You do the thumb flip.
Exactly. Like it's a lighter or something. You just fidget with it. Yeah, so I'm going to go with Tic Tac here over banana.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Tic Tac packaging as well because, the banana's not – banana's really not all that satisfying to open. I personally do it the primate chimpanzee sort of way where it's from the bottom.
Yeah, the bottom, yeah.
A lot easier to open. I think I saw that on Food Network.
You don't do it the K-Pax way? You don't just eat the banana with the peel on?
Oh, you thought I was going to open this banana, didn't you?
Have you ever done the Tic Tac thing where you open it and you have the Tic Tac go on the little slit on the inside of the top?
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, you mean you just get stuck there?
Yeah, but you're apparently supposed to. That's how you're supposed to dispense a Tic Tac. That's how you get one.
You just keep a Tic Tac on deck?
Yeah, if you turn it upside down, you flip it, you open it, it's in that little crevice. It's in the Tic Tac holder.
What?
Yeah. That's why it's there. Yeah.
I never knew that, man. No, I just popped it. I did the finger flip to pop it
open. Yeah, no, I mean if you do the way where you put it into the little boat underneath the lid, you're a crazy person. But that is what it's there for.
You ever do the finger flip open with the seal still on?
Give the clean break
straight off.
What's your favorite Tic Tac flavor?
Orange, dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Kidding.
Mm-hmm. I could down a box of orange M&Ms right now. Or Tic Tacs right now.
I love orange Tic Tacs.
Orange flavored M&Ms are delicious.
Back in the day, I only remember there being three Tic Tacs back in the day. There was green, white, and orange. And then now Tic Tacs have basically become a candy because every time I see a Tic Tac, it's like
tropical pink
and yellow or what? Or pink,
passion
yellow, and
fruit
orange.
Tic Tacs. Like, come on, man. Give me the spearmint, the orange.
Imagine being the brand manager for Tic Tacs. It's like, well, they're supposed to be mints, but nobody eats them as mints. So I guess they're candy, but even then they're not a really good candy.
I think they were part of that big lawsuit, right? Because they have 0.99999 grams of sugar in it so that they can say that there's 0 grams of sugar in it because you need to have over a gram of sugar to qualify as having a gram of sugar in it. There's some weird bylaw of it. I know they're bypassing for saying that they're sugar-free. I think that's it. If you don't have a gram of sugar, you're considered sugar-free.
It's bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
All right, the matchup is the video game compact disc versus the action figure. What do you guys got?
It's hard.
This is hard.
Action figure.
I got to go action figure too.
There's so many cool components to it too, because then you got to take out the plastic bubble around it. And
especially if you got I mean, throughout the years, there are many different action figures I've purchased, both for opening and for displaying next to my bed to watch me have sex. But with that Funko Pop thing you sent me the other day,
it was like,
have you ever lost your virginity with your pops in the room?
Yeah, and which pop was watching you fuck for the first time? It's like, I have my Iron Man. It's with me all the time.
It's like, I gave him a nod as I was...
I think I'm going to go with video game only because my action figure phase, and I loved G.I. Joe's growing up, but it faded to video games so quickly. I feel like I didn't have a full chance to explore action figure phase. But that high of serotonin you got as a kid with action figures was unbelievable. But I still have to give it to video games.
Did you guys ever see the 1989 Ninja Turtle action figures and packaging?
No, can't say I have.
I won't delay the podcast. But they had these... They're the turtles. It was like really cool packaging. It's like my favorite action figures ever. But then there was this like plastic stamp out where you had to like twist off the weapons, and they weren't even like painted or anything like that. I'll find a picture for you guys. It's not that interesting, but it's definitely like 1989 levels of jank.
I think I sent it.
I just like our technology's gotten so much better, but it's not like always in super cool ways. In a lot of ways, it's like now we're just better at like molding Don Cheadle's face onto like an action figure.
War machine.
But what does that mean? Does that mean action figures moves on?
I was thinking a Hotel Rwanda action figure line collectible set. Yeah, action figures moves on. As much as I love opening a CD, a DVD, there's nothing better than an action figure. Which leaves us at a shoebox full of new shoes versus Tic Tacs.
Again, the reusability of the Tic Tac and the opening, I'm going to go with that.
I think Tic Tacs for me. Tic Tacs because it's of anything on this list, it's endless. It's endless. It'll never...
It's the original fidget spinner.
It is. And it's better because if you can't eat the fidget spinner.
Yep.
No,
exactly.
I like the shoe. I like the shoebox full of shoes. The smell, but
once that smell is gone, that's over. Like the Tic Tac is endless.
When the Tic Tac, I'm stammering. I'm Lucas Hedges. Yeah, in the movie
you're hedging right yourself right now.
Yeah, I'm doing a Lucas Hedges and let them meet cake.
Got a hedge.
All right, well, Tic Tacs moves on. I won't, I'm not going to defend the new shoes, but our final matchup will be the action figure versus the Tic Tacs.
I love action figures. Don't open them anymore if I buy them. Used to. But again, I think you're working with an unfair advantage with the Tic Tacs. It's an unfair because even after you open the initial thing with the action figure, that's it. After the initial pop of the Tic Tac,
you throw it out.
You just continue to get that opening.
Exactly. Over and over and
over.
It's
too versatile.
Sustained success. It's the sugar bear of this competition.
I got to go action figures, but you guys are going with the Tic Tacs. And I'd say I know enough to pronounce the Tic Tac the winner. I put the Tic Tacs on the list for a reason. It's because it's one of the most satisfying things to open that I could ever think of.
That little click, suction.
It's that Kentucky team that had one loss to Indiana and then went on to ride to the national title.
Trill knows that well.
The Christian Watford shot. That was a good time. Tom Crean was just close. If he could have figured out what Jim Boeheim's zone defense was all about in the countless hours of the 40 years of his fucking career that he ran it.
It was.
What do you think Boeheim's going to throw at us?
It's not like he didn't face it at Marquette or anything either. Tom Crean, after the Watford shot, had his Matthew Morrison glee moment where he.
Oh, went. Yeah. He was thinking he's going to get a drink named after him at St. Elmo's Steakhouse in Indianapolis.
This is just the beginning.
He's going to get a statue next to the Bob Knight statue that was torn down. No, I don't think Bob Knight ever got a statue. But
all right. So Jeff's computer just died, but we'll close it out. So next week, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom on Netflix, The Midnight Sky also on Netflix. Tic Tac, go get yourself some. Promo code LIGHTS. I am Ken Jack. Jeff's computer died, and this is Trill. And from all of us,
Have a good week at the box office.